Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's our spring membership drive, and we'll talk more about that in a few minutes. First, more than a third of American households include a dog and or a cat. 4% live with birds, and about 2% live with horses. The average cost per year per dog for the vet is $200. Per cat, about $80, and that's just the average. When something goes wrong, let's be honest, sometimes it's difficult to grasp all the details and consequences, let alone the bills. If you turn to books, then, an obvious choice is the home edition of the Merck Muriel Manual for Pet Health. If you're into economy and want to know more about your options when things go wrong, the Merck Muriel Manual for Pet Health is a logical destination for information. So joining us today is Scott Line. He's the associate editor of the Merck Muriel Manual for Pet Health. Scott also is a veterinarian. He has a PhD in animal behavior and is a board-certified veterinary behaviorist. Scott earned his Doctor of Veterinarian degree at Ohio State University. So welcome back to Columbus, Scott.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Thanks for joining us. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and this is our spring membership drive. Make your pledge right now at WOSU.org or by calling 1-866-897-9678. That's 1-866-897-9678. Our goal this hour is $4,000. We can meet this goal with your help. We can only meet it with your help. Online pledges count toward the goal, too, at WOSU.org. And with a pledge of support at the $120 level, our thank you gift to you will be the book, The Merck Muriel Manual for Pet Health. This book is more than 1,300 pages. I'm telling you, it's heavy, and it delivers pet health expertise in everyday language that all pet owners can understand. Get this book and support public radio and the health of your pet for a pledge of $120. Go online to WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. That's 1-866-897-9678. And I, once again, will reiterate, this is a big, fat book. Scott, how did you decide what would and wouldn't go in it?
Well, we based the book on one that we do for veterinarians, and that one has a long history. It was first published in 1955. It's the Merck Veterinary Manual, and we try to make it as comprehensive as possible. And so when we decided to do a book for pet owners, we said, well, let's take everything that applies to pet animals. So that includes not only dogs and cats, but also horses, birds, small animals, exotic pets. And we said, well, let's include all the information that we already have for veterinarians for all the people that own these pets. And so, you know, it did become a pretty long book. I think it weighs about 4 pounds, but, you know, we really wanted to make it the one-stop place to go for everything you need to know about animals.
But it's not necessarily for breeders or professionals in the animal health business. It's for everyday people, everyday pet owners.
Right, right. We took the technical language that is in the professional version, and then we rewrote it into more familiar terms, trying to make it more understandable. And really the idea behind the book is that you might have an appointment with your vet, and he might talk about what your animal's condition is, and he might use a lot of technical jargon and things like that. And so we said, well, what if somebody goes home after that 10-minute, 15-minute appointment and now wants more information about it? This way they can go to the book and look up the information and get it in pretty much everyday language and maybe learn more about what their veterinarian was communicating with them.
Yeah, I've had pets where there's been bad news, and sometimes you're in a little bit of a state of shock when you're getting the bad news, and you're trying to listen, but it's just not sinking in.
Well, and if a lot of it is new information, it's hard to retain all of that. And so repetition can make it easier to understand. So, and looking at it in a different way in print versus hearing it by ear, I mean, you can look at it different ways and maybe understand it better.
My guest is Scott Line. He's a veterinarian. He was trained at Ohio State University. He has a PhD in animal behavior and is a board-certified veterinary behaviorist. He's also the associate editor of the Merck Muriel Manual for Pet Health. That's our gift to you at the $120 pledge level. You can make that pledge right now at 1-866-897-9678. That's 1-866-897-9678. 877-9678. This is a great investment in your family and your family pet. And it covers all different kinds of pets too, Scott. Lots of people, you don't think about, you know, you don't want to go about buy a whole book if you're thinking about getting fish, or if you're thinking about getting, maybe fish isn't a good example, but maybe a hamster is a good example. You even talk about hamsters.
Yeah, we have a chapter on hamsters. We even include some of the more exotic pets that have become popular recently, like sugar gliders.
Wait a minute. What's a sugar glider? I didn't have a chance to look that up.
Marsupial. They're native to Australia originally. And some people, you know, like having different and exotic sorts of animals as pets. And so a lot of people have been getting them. But they're nocturnal animals. I don't know if they necessarily make a better pet than, you know, animals that interact with you during the daytime. But for some people, that's their cup of tea. So we decided if people are going to have them, well, let's provide some basic information. For most of the species in the book, we'll tell you about things like basic care guidelines, you know, what you're going to need to feed them, what you could expect, what's the typical lifespan, and other information like that. So if you're new to a particular animal, this is a good way to get some basic information.
1-866-897-9678. That's the number to call to show your support for WOSU and 89.7 NPR News and All Sides with Dan Fisher. If you want to speak with our guest, Scott Line, veterinarian and associate editor of the Merck Muriel Manual for Pet Health, you can call 1-614-292-8513. Your calls are welcome. If you have a question for Scott, those are welcome. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. And you can go on to our WOSU.org/allsides website and post on Facebook from the website if that is your preferred mode of communication. This is listener supported 89.7 NPR News, and this is All Sides with Dan Fisher. Call 1-866-897-9678 and make a pledge of $120 and pick up your very own copy of the Merck Muriel Manual for Pet Health. This book will help you stay in touch with the health of your pet. The book has sections on dogs and cats, of course, but it also has information on horses, rabbits, birds, fish, ferrets, and more. Pick up this thank you gift for a pledge of $120. Go to WOSU.org, post online, or pledge online. It takes just a few minutes, or call 1-866-897-9678. That takes just a few minutes as well. Scott, how do folks know that the Merck, is it, I hope I've been pronouncing it properly, Merck Muriel?
Yes.
Manual for Pet Health. How do they know it can be trusted? How did you go about preparing the chapters?
Well, the book, as I said, is based on our professional edition for veterinarians, and that book is a really broad-based project. It's not just the opinion of one author or one veterinarian. We have experts in all different fields of veterinary medicine writing chapters for us. It's whatever they specialize in, we go to the top people around the world, and we have about 200 authors that were the originators of the content for this book. And so it's people that specialize in, say, dealing with parasites or dealing with lameness in horses or whatever topic you have, you know, they'll write a chapter for us. And so we take the best information we can gather from experts around the country and around the world and then compile that all together into one place.
Thanks to Sarah in Dublin and Mary in Columbus for starting off the hour for us. We have $2,620 to go from our original $3,000 goal. $2,620 to go. Make the call right now, 1-866-897-9678, and then get on the horn and call us at 614-292-8513 if you have a question about your pet or about the book. My guest is Scott Line. He's the associate editor of the Merck Muriel Manual for Pet Health. And Judy in Reynoldsburg, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. I've just got a ton of questions, but I'll try to be brief.
Okay.
I'm a relatively new pet owner. It was 30 years ago that I had a cat, which rarely saw the inside of a vet's office and lived 15 years. I recently got a cat at a shelter, a non-kill shelter. I've had the cat about 6 weeks and brought it home apparently with an upper respiratory infection. So I'm just stunned at the vet bills that have already gone into this adorable little guy.
Mm-hmm.
How do you evaluate, you know, whether you're getting over care or what's too much, just like people. You know, we don't run to the doctor with the common cold, but with pets, we don't know about pets. We don't know about...
They can't talk to us.
Yeah, they can't tell you. And so this cat was coughing, sneezing, runny eyes. We've got some of that taken care of. Then it wasn't eating. Now it has constipation. I mean, it's just been 5 weeks and several hundred dollars worth. Right. And, you know, I had the love and the time. I retired recently to give to a pet. But I'm just kind of, I'm starting to sweat it out. Like, what if this just doesn't get better?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sorry to hear you've been having a number of issues with your cat. It is something that these days, you know, veterinary care can be expensive because veterinarians are using a lot of the same technologies that physicians are using to care for human patients. And so, you know, there's a lot more diagnostic tests available. There's a lot more up-to-date treatments and things like that available. And it can be expensive if your animal runs into a number of different health problems. One thing you might want to consider, too, once things have settled down a little bit, is looking into an option like pet insurance. There are policies out there that can help cover for some of these unexpected kinds of expenses. But
no, I actually considered that. This guy's already had an overnight hospital stay and IVs and all of that. But you're right. He's on erythromycin, and my grandfather, an old country doctor, I remember using erythromycin. So, yeah, here we are, you know. But it's a little, I think people need to, if you have any ideas about what they can do when they go to shelters to get these tests.
I was going to say, you it was a no-kill shelter. Scott, there are a lot more people adopting from these shelters now. There's been a huge surge in promoting that kind of adoption these days. Are you starting to see it at, you know, are veterinarians seeing more pets like this?
Well, people get pets from a lot of different sources. Mm-hmm. You know, some of them come from shelters, some of them come from individuals. A lot of people get cats just as strays that they find out on the streets. You know, and anytime you find an animal or, you know, first bring one home, you might want to say, you know, let's take them in first for just a general checkup at a veterinarian. In this case, it may have been unfortunate that, you know, the animal may have been incubating something. It may not have been showing signs of illness right away. And then, you know, it only shows up a week or 2 weeks or several weeks after you bring them home. But, you know, if you go to a reputable shelter, a lot of them will have their own veterinarians on staff. They'll be vaccinating animals in the shelter. They'll be trying to take care of them as best they can before they put them out for adoption.
Thanks, Judy, for that call. I guess, you know, just to get back to Judy's issue, part of it is maybe being able to talk to your vet better.
Yes, yes. And that's something that, you know, you want to find out from them what options are there. You know, are there a whole range of diagnostic tests available? Are there some approaches that might be simpler, like saying, well, let's try a treatment first. If we don't necessarily know, you know, what the exact diagnosis is, maybe we can try a treatment as a trial basis and see what happens. You know, there's trade-offs to be made. I mean, it may be more risky to try a treatment without having the exact diagnosis, but as we've seen, it may be a little more expensive to get everything nailed down in terms of what the illness is. And it also sounded like in this case, there were multiple things happening besides mm-hmm. respiratory disease. There were some digestive issues and certainly, you know, having multiple things happen can be, you know, it can require more treatments and more expense. And that's one thing that it just goes along with being a pet owner. You don't always know what's going to happen, but you have to be prepared that, you know, there may be things that require treatment.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and this is our spring membership drive. And our goal today is simple, to get your pledge of support at 1-866-897-9678 or online at WOSU.org. And in return for your pledge, we're offering you the Merck Mariel Manual for Pet Health at the $120 pledge level. Support All Sides with Ann Fisher with one phone call right now, and you have done your part for the entire year. Make a gift of $120 right now and help us reach our goal. Go to WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. That's 1-866-897-9678. 9678. Our goal this hour was $3,000, and we have just about $2,620 still to go to raise in the next 40 minutes or so. This goal is important to us to keep us on track for the overall goal of the drive. 1-866-897-9678 or online at WOSU.org. Make a gift in any amount, whatever seems fair to you, whatever you can afford. If you depend on WOSU and 89.7 for your news and information, if you're a regular listener, think about what seems fair to you and how much you can afford, and give us a call. 1-866-897-9678. If you want to give us a call and talk with our guest, Scott Lyne, the veterinarian and associate editor of the Merck Muriel Manual for Pet Health, call 614-292-8513. And you can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from Carol. She writes, I have a Jack Russell Terrier and his hip, parenthetically, she asks, do dogs have hips, seems to pop out of socket from time to time. All he has to do is sit and it goes back in place. Our vet said not to worry and that it happens. We have been giving him a hip and joint treatment, vitamins, that seems to help. Any other suggestions?
Well, dogs do have hips. I mean, their bone structure is pretty much just like people's. The basic skeleton is the same in a lot of different species. I mean, the proportions are different, but they do have the same parts. In terms of what's happening, it's hard to know. Some dogs do have kind of a shallow hip socket, and that may come out, or luxate is the technical term, a little more readily in some individuals than in others. You may want to just, you know, keep an eye on it. If it becomes more frequent or if the dog seems to be in pain, then you might want to look at other options for treatment. There are some surgeries that could be done. There are some medications that could be given to help alleviate pain or inflammation.
You know, one of the things that's so great about the book is all the diagrams in there. And when you talk about what a dog looks like on the inside, you've got all of the pictures.
Yes, and that's something we had about 300 illustrations made just for this book to help explain things. Sometimes it is easier just to see something rather than to just describe it. And in addition to that, at the back of the book, we also added a glossary. So if you hear a lot of these technical terms, we have them all listed there and we have them all defined for you.
Chris and Gahanna, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to ask him about the new grain-free alternatives to both dog and cat foods that are seen to be being mass-produced, even PetSmart, your local. I mean, it's not really in Walmart or Kroger for the most part, but there is a lot of this going on.
It's in Costco.
Oh, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then it's even more mass-produced, I thought. just wanted to see his input in this.
Well, I haven't tried those kinds of foods myself. I have a couple of pets at home, a couple of dogs, a couple of cats. And one thing I would suggest is that whatever type of food you're feeding the animals, make sure it's gone through feeding trials. There's a group called AFCO. It's I forget exactly what all the initials stand for. But anyway, they test out foods and make sure that they support the whole nutritional needs of an animal, make sure that they can, you know, maintain a healthy body weight and live through all the different life stages like growth, development, having a litter, et cetera. So you want to look for that on the label of the bag of dog food or cat food to make sure that what you're giving is complete nutrition and it's been tested and shown to support a healthy lifestyle for whatever type of pet you have.
My dog is allergic, we figured out, to wheat. And so that's why we use it. That's why it's being produced largely, isn't it, for dogs and, you know, animals that are sensitive to gluten?
Some of them are. Some people have different theories about, you know, what's best for animals. You know, there are some because cats originally are thought of as just strict carnivores. And so some people think, well, you should feed them only meat. But that kind of doesn't take into account the fact that when a cat catches a small animal and eats it, they're eating all of the grains and other things that might be in that animal's digestive tract to begin with. So they don't consume nothing but meat. Mm-hmm. But anyway, some of those foods are designed to, like, relieve allergies, which is a common problem in dogs and cats. You know, some of them, I think, are just, you know, people have different theories about what's best. And I don't think all of us know, you know, exactly what the best requirements are for dogs and cats. And there's a lot of debate, a lot of research going on about those kinds of things. So anyway, you know, to me, the best thing to do is look at a food that's been well tested, well regulated, you know, one that you know is going to meet the broad nutritional needs that the animal has.
Chris, does that help? Chris?
The Blue, which is holistic for both dogs and cats. Do you have any suggestions other than the one I named?
Actually, Chris, could you repeat that?
I just wanted to see if you had any suggestions on food, like the actual food products. Like right now, I'm using Blue. It's called Blue. It's a holistic food. Does he have any suggestions for like a top tier dog and cat food?
Yeah, I don't have like specific brands that I like to recommend. Again, I typically just go for one that's commercially produced and, again, that has been through the kinds of feeding trials and tested to make sure it's adequate.
By the way, that's the Association of American Feed Control Officials.
Yes, thank you.
It's a nonprofit organization that sets standards for the quality and safety of animal feed, fodder, and pet food in the United States. Chris, thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. 614-292-8513. That's the number to call if you have a question or comment for our guest, a veterinarian, Scott Line. He's OSU trained. He is also the associate editor of the Merck Muriel Manual for Pet Health. That's our gift to you today at the $120 pledge level. The Merck Muriel Manual for Pet Health delivers animal health expertise in everyday language that all pet owners can understand. This in-depth resource, authored by more than 200 veterinarian experts, covers the full spectrum of today's pets, from dogs, cats, and horses to birds, reptiles, fish, and other exotic pets I've never heard of. This 1,300-page book is one resource for a lifetime of pets. So there's a lot of detail in this book. Learn about common disorders and diseases for dogs and cats, and learn some basics about selecting a pet and providing it a home. Give us a call at 1-866-897-9678 and make that pledge right now. We have about a little over $2,600 to go and just a little over 30 minutes. $2,600 in 30 minutes. We can do it. We can do it with your help. Don't wait. Make the call now or go online to WOSU.org and push on, I think that says donate now. Just click on that, and 2 minutes later, it'll all be over with. It's painless, and it actually makes you feel better when you know that you're supporting your local public radio station. In this case, WOSU 89.7 NPR News, and All Sides with Dan Fisher, for that matter. 614-292-8513 is the number to call for questions. 1-866-897-9678 is the number to call to make that pledge right now. And thanks for your support. Kathy in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. Mm-hmm. I have a question. We have a 4-H group with children that train their dogs. And one of the girls has a little Yorkie poo that's about 8 months old. In the 4-H program, for training purposes, they have to use either a flat buckle collar or the choke chain type of collar. And I'm wondering, when she's using that, the choke chain, the dog constantly pulls. It's just pulling constantly. So currently, they're using a harness, but it doesn't do anything to deter the pulling with the dog. If she switches to a choke chain type of collar, does that have the potential to harm a dog that size? It's a tiny, tiny little Yorkie poo.
It's probably not likely the dog is going to pull itself enough to do some real damage. With a very small dog, if the child pulled back too hard on the leash, that potentially could cause an injury. One of the alternatives that I like to use in those kinds of situations, and really for large dogs, for dogs of about any size, is the halter-type collars. There are several different types that are available now, and those are designed to work more with the sort of instinctive ways that dogs react. You know, if you put a flat collar or a choke chain or even a harness on, the dogs will tend to pull, and as you pull back, they pull even harder because they just sort of have a reflex in which they pull against where they feel pressure. But with the halter-type collars, they have a part that fits around the nose and another part that fits up around the back of the head. And when you pull on that lead or the dog pulls forward, they feel pressure on the back of the head instead of on the front of the neck. And resisting that means their tendency is to slow down or to back up or to relieve a little bit of the pressure. So, you know, it may be that right now the 4-H doesn't like those kinds of collars or use them for their training classes, but you might want to talk to them and say, you know, this is a a new alternative, this is something that may work better in this particular case. And I found that they're very effective at stopping dogs from pulling and jumping and other kinds of things like that.
Do they have those even for the tiny dogs, like the Yorkie poos? Is that something like the gentle leader? Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, that's one type I've used a lot. And they do come in very small sizes, so you can get them to fit pretty much any type of dog.
Okay. So what about what would you say about like a martingale collar? Or is she going to end up with the same sort of thing as a flat buckle or choke chain?
Yeah, those will also help a little bit. The dog may still pull some against that, but it's not going to restrict the neck quite as much as the other, like a choke chain might potentially. But the one type of dog where you may have a problem with some of these halter collars is ones with a very short nose or kind of a flat face. Sometimes those, you can't get the loop to stay above the nose well enough.
Okay. All right. Very good.
All right.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Kathy. If you have a question or comment for our guest, Scott Line, veterinarian and associate editor of the Merck Muriel Manual for Pet Health, give us a call at 614-292-8513. We welcome your questions today. We also welcome your support. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And every day, All Sides brings you interesting conversations with fascinating people who are experts in their field, just like Scott. This isn't something we do just for Pledge. This is something we do any day of the year. It's not just about Pledge, but we're doing it for you today, and we would hope that this would inspire you to show your support and tell us this is the kind of programming that you appreciate. We do politics, we do environment, we do economics, we, you know, you name it, we pretty much do it, don't we? So if there's a little bit of something in there for you and you appreciate it, tell us what it's worth to you and give us a call right now. At any pledge level, we appreciate your support. It's not only the money, it's you're telling us you care. And you can leave comments with our volunteers who are awaiting your calls right now. 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. That's 1-866-897-9678. At the $60 pledge level, you can get your WOSU membership card, member card too. And I use mine quite a bit. Those actually work. They're easy to use. And it's our gift to you at the $60 pledge level. So make the call right now at whatever level you can afford, whether it's a dollar a week, a dollar a day. Make the call now and show your support right now. Don't wait. 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. If you want to send a question, you can also do that via email at allsides@wosu.org. And if you want to make a call, 614-292-8513. There's a guide for readers at the front of the book, Scott. Why is that important?
Well, we put that in because it is a large book. There's a lot of information, and we thought it would help people to sort of organize or understand how we've organized the book. And one thing we've also tried to make clear is that the book is really not designed to be a substitute for veterinary care. I mean, it's mm-hmm. not something you're going to pick up and flip through and say, okay, my dog's coughing, what does that mean, and how do I treat it? We've really designed the book to be a supplement to veterinary care and to help you better understand, you know, what condition your pet has. And really, it's essential if your pet has a health issue that you get somebody to see it. I've talked to lots of people over the phone, and my impression of what's happening is often very, very different from what I see when I actually go and meet with someone and do a direct appointment.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's really a crucial thing to have that direct veterinary animal human patient interaction to get a clear understanding of what's happening. And so we put a couple of disclaimers in the front of the book about that, you know, because we don't want people to think that, you know, this is really going to allow you to, you know, substitute your own ideas for, you know, professional veterinary care to help take care of your animals.
It seems this would be very helpful. The idea I got from reading it was if my dog has a symptom, you can look up symptoms, you can look up diarrhea and look and see, you know, learn more about it and what it might mean. And you can go to the vet then with a little more, you know, kind of prep in advance.
Right.
And a little more understanding about the condition.
Mm-hmm. And we've also again, we're trying to get accurate information out there. Again, it's something that is written by veterinarians and other specialists, like some pathologists and others who have PhDs in different fields, people that know the most about these particular disorders. And so, you know, as opposed to some other sources of information where you're not really sure if it's up to date or if it's accurate, this is something that's been well vetted. But it's something that, again, it's designed to be helpful and written in kind of everyday language so that it's easier for everybody to get the idea behind it.
And by the way, it's a nonprofit operation, right?
Yes, yes, it is. It's something that, you know, Merck and Merrill have done this really as a not-for-profit operation to provide a public service both for animal owners in general and for veterinarians with the other professional book that we do. I mean, the idea is to try and collect together the best information we can from specialists around the world and say, you know, here's one central resource that provides you the basic information that you need.
Folks, make the calls now. Show your support now. 1-866-897-9678. This is a great reference book for any pet owner for a lifetime of pets. You never know what kind of pet's coming up across beyond the horizon. So this is that kind of one-size-fits-all book in the sense that it covers many different kinds of pets. And a lot on dogs and cats, of course, and birds and horses, but on a lot of other things, too, that you wouldn't necessarily want to go out and have to buy a whole book on when the time comes. It's all kind of there in this big, fat book. Like I said, it's 1,400 pages, and it's quite a bit to lug around. 1-866-897-9678. It's our gift to you at the $120 pledge level, so make the call right now or go online to WOSU.org. We really need you to show your support today, now. And Jonathan in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. I have a comment and a question. First, the comment is I've recently done a lot of research in veterinary medicine, and turns out OSU is one of the best vet schools in the country.
And Scott Line is educated there, yep.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
My question is, I and my wife have two little toy dogs, and one of them is a six-month-old Yorkie who is tiny but recently broke his leg and has been spending a considerable amount of time in the hospital. He has never received the Bordetella shot. Should I be worried?
Well, Bordetella is a vaccine that's for an upper respiratory infection. It's actually a bacterial infection of the lungs and upper respiratory tract. And if your dog is exposed to a lot of other dogs, it often is a good idea to get that vaccination. What I would suggest is talk with your vet and say, you know, am I at a higher risk here? Do you think this is a reasonable option? They're going to know your dog's full background and history, and they'll be the best one to advise you on what the appropriate vaccinations are. But in general terms, those kinds of vaccines like Bordetella, which is also known as a kennel cough vaccine, is often recommended for dogs that are traveling a lot, dogs that are, say, going to daycare a lot or going to dog parks a lot, you know, ones that are exposed to a lot of other dogs, because, you know, the more dogs your pet is around, the more exposure they're going to have to, you know, other dogs that might potentially be infected.
Right. Well, then I have a follow-up. He's been spending a number of weeks in this hospital. And I've discussed this with the doctor, and they don't seem particularly worried. It is one of the presumably top hospitals in Columbus, MedVet.
I'm surprised.
They don't seem at all worried, yet he's a four-pound little dog. Should I be insistent even beyond their worry?
Well, it may be that they've got a really good infection prevention protocol set up in their hospital. If they have animals that are hospitalized, you know, isolated, and they're not, you know, there's not a lot of traffic in and out, exposure to other animals is minimized, they may say, well, you know, in our case, we think the risk really is minimal, and we don't think it's a requirement. So really, I would bring it up with them and say, you know, I'm concerned about this. What are all my options here?
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Jonathan. Thanks for listening. Thanks for that call. And thank you to Nick in Columbus. We have $2,500 to go and just under 20 minutes. Let's get 20 calls in 20 minutes, and we'll probably hit our goal. $2,500 to go in 20 minutes. We need to make our goals now. We need to make them today. 1-866-897-9678. That's 1-866-897-9678. Make the call right now, and you'll feel better. And your dog will feel better. If you go at the $120 pledge level, our gift to you is the Merck Mariel Manual for Pet Health. And it's a 1,400-page book that covers pretty much the gamut, and in particular, dogs and cats. So make the call right now. You can also go online to WOSU.org. We're behind in meeting our overall goal of the drive. We only have 2.5 days left. Please don't wait. Make your pledge now and become an inspiration for the next person down the line. Show us you care about listening to this kind of programming. We don't just do it for pledge drive. We do it all the time. So make the call right now and tell us you care about it. We have a message from Mary on Facebook. She says, how can you stop male cats from spraying in the house? Is that the $56,000 question, Scott?
No, it's a very common problem with male cats. It can be a complicated issue. The first step, and the one that's most likely to help, is to have a cat neutered if it hasn't been already. Many times that's already been done, but that's, you know, the basic first step is to look at having the cat neutered, because that is very likely going to decrease their motivation to go around and start marking. There are a range of other different options, and it really depends on the individual situation. When I would do behavioral appointments with people, I would often spend an hour to an hour and a half getting a full background and seeing the cat in its home environment and really understanding what's happening, because many of these kinds of behavioral issues with cats can be very complicated. It could be a conflict with other cats in the household. It could be that the cat's nervous about something. Maybe there's been a change in the household. So the treatment options are really going to vary depending on what the source of the problem is. But as a first step, again, you might want to check with your vet and say, okay, if the cat's not neutered, let's try that and see if that will solve the problem. And if not, then we may need to talk to a behaviorist and really get an in-depth background and history so that we can properly diagnose things and then see what's next in the range of options that we have as far as treatments.
It's probably worth the money, right? I mean, spraying can damage a lot of things, including wood floors.
Certainly. And it's something that sometimes very simple treatments can help. You really need to distinguish between, is it just a marking or spraying problem, or is there something about the litter box the cat doesn't like and it's starting to go in other places because of that? And some of those fixes can be very simple things to do. In some cases, the cats, again, if they're very anxious or nervous, you might want to look at things like anti-anxiety medication. I mean, I've had a number of cases where cats that were spraying frequently were helped quite a bit by temporarily being on a medication that makes them feel better, and then you can get them onto a different sort of routine.
Cats get stressed out too, huh?
They do. They react to a lot of things. Moving can be stressful to cats, social interactions. There's a whole range of stuff.
We have an email from Jennifer. She writes, I have a 13-year-old cat diagnosed with hyperthyroidism and renal disease. Which treatment is better for the hyperthyroidism, the medication or the iodine-9 treatment?
Well, that's something that's going to be very difficult for me to say. I don't like to practice sort of at a distance just by theoretically thinking about, what things could be done for one particular cat.
What is the iodine-9 treatment?
It's a radioactive type of iodine, and essentially what happens is you inject that into the cat, and that will concentrate in the thyroid gland, and that will kill some of the thyroid gland cells, and that will reduce the amount of thyroid hormone that's being produced. And that's the basic cause of the problem in hyperthyroidism is the cat's producing too much of the thyroid hormone.
Mm-hmm.
And so the radioactive iodine that's put in gets taken up by the gland, and then that kills off some of those cells and brings the levels back down toward normal. So you can do that sort of a treatment. Sometimes they'll do a surgery. Without seeing the cat and really having the full medical history, it's hard to say which is going to be the best approach. It depends on the other conditions. She also mentioned something about the cat having some kidney problems or renal problems.
Right.
That might complicate, what you can do in terms of other treatments. So really, getting someone to, examine the cat directly is the best way to say, okay, here's, a full background of the situation and here's the best treatment option.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org if you have a question or comment for our guest, Scott Line. He's a veterinarian, OSU-trained veterinarian. He's also the associate editor of the Merck Muriel Manual for Pet Health. I was just looking to see if hyperthyroidism is covered in the book, page 140.
We cover a lot of hormonal disorders, metabolic disorders. There's a whole range of different things within each animal species. And then we also have a separate section that covers general topics like traveling with pets, emergency care, like what to do if there's an accident, poisonings, because there's a lot of things in the household that might be toxic to animals. So each of those topics also has a separate chapter.
I know that you think that somebody else is going to call and pledge their support for WOSU right now, but right now we need you to call and pledge your support. 1-866-897-9678. We need just 14 more calls to go in about 14 minutes. 14 more calls, thanks to Kimberly in Columbus. We need your help now. We need everybody to pitch in and pitch in what you can afford and pitch in what you think is fair for how you value the programming on 89.7 NPR News, how you value the programming on All Sides. 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. Our thank you gift this hour at the $120 level is the book, The Merck Muriel Manual for Pet Health. Call right now and remember that any gift of $60 or more entitles you to the WOSU member card, which is good for discounts at more than 200 area restaurants and attractions. Pick up this essential pet health manual produced by a nonprofit operation, which is a must-have for every pet owner for a pledge of $120. Go to WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. Be one of the 14 that helps us make our goal this hour. 1-866-897-9678. We really do need your help. We really do need to know that you support WOSU. Mary in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. I have a question on senior dogs' diets. We have a 12-year-old mixed breed, and I just have her on an adult light formula to make sure she doesn't gain too much weight. And it seems like a lot of senior formulas have maybe less proven supplements for joint problems and whatnot. And with a dog in fairly good health, is there any need to use a senior food?
Well, I would say that if your dog is healthy and doing well on the food, I would continue doing that. One other thing you might want to consider, too, though, is that older dogs, especially those 12, 14, 15 years and up, are more likely to develop problems that are similar to Alzheimer's disease in people. There's a syndrome called canine cognitive dysfunction, which essentially is like a form of dementia in dogs. And it might show up by things like the dog getting confused or getting lost within the household. You might see changes in their sleep patterns. You might find that they're not as well house trained as they used to be. Some of those things might be signs that this is happening. And there are some diets available now, as well as other treatments, that might help prevent that sort of a problem from happening in, extremely old dogs. But if your dog is healthy and doing well on an adult sort of a diet, then I would say, that sounds like a pretty good way to go.
We did have a prior dog who was 15 years old who did have cognitive problems, and medication helped somewhat. But this dog seems very much with it still.
Yeah. I would say, just making sure your dog has regular checkups to make sure that there aren't any underlying problems that you just don't see outwardly is a good way to go. And, good luck with keeping them healthy as long as you can.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mary. Wow. Nice old age dogs there. 614-292-8513. We have a few more minutes left for your calls, your questions, and comments for our guest, Scott Line, Associate Editor of the Merck Muriel Manual for Pet Health. We also have a few more minutes left for you to show your support. I want to say thanks to Gail in Columbus. We need 13 more calls in just about 9 minutes. 13 calls in about 9 minutes, and it'll help us meet our goal. 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. I know, once again, you think it might be somebody else that's going to make the call, but it has to be you now. Every dollar makes a difference. Give what you can afford. Give what you think is fair for the kind of programming you receive every day, 24/7, on WOSU. Show your support for 89.7 NPR News and show it right now. We need 13 more calls in just about 9 minutes. Make the call right now, and we appreciate it. And thanks for your support. Nancy in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I had a question about a cat that suffered a puncture wound. Unfortunately, a veterinarian had thought it was a tooth. It turned out to be a puncture wound in the cheek. And the cat died during the ice storm last February because they minimally treated her with fluids and a course of antibiotics, which had expired. And I hoped to get her to the vet again, but during the ice storm without power, I was unable to get out. I couldn't get anybody in to help me. Uh-huh. Anyway, I was told by a physician in my apartment building here that there's a drug on the horizon for people that will help reverse sepsis. Would that possibly be on the horizon for animals? In other words, if an animal has a bad infection, what is sepsis, and is there something now or in the future that might radically reverse the effects of that process other than antibiotics and fluids?
Sepsis basically is defined as an infection that's widespread throughout the body. It's something that's traveling through the bloodstream, and wounds in a variety of areas can potentially seed bacteria into the bloodstream, and then if an animal is already debilitated or, you know, in generally poor condition, that might make them more susceptible. I mean, normally your immune system will fight off those kinds of infections, but, you know, if a cat's already stressed by other illness, it may become overwhelming. And, you know, that's something that typically, you know, requires very aggressive care in terms of keeping them warm, giving them fluids, giving them supplemental nutrition, giving them antibiotics, and, you know, doing tests to try and identify this specific type of bacteria. So it's a very complicated kind of a problem. I'm not aware at this point of any particular veterinary drugs being developed to help treat the complications involved with sepsis. But in many cases, if there isn't a specific veterinary drug, then veterinarians can also use human drugs. And again, depending on what the cost is and what the dosage would be, you may be able to use the same kind of a medication in an animal that you would in a person. You know, sometimes that's done just on an experimental basis at first, because a lot of times there are differences in terms of how animals metabolize things, and so we wouldn't use necessarily the same dosage. But you know, that may be one option down the line.
Thanks, Nancy, for that call, and thanks to Shelley in Delaware, and thanks to Rick and Marion. We need 11 more calls now. We have 6 minutes. 11 calls in 6 minutes. I know we can do it. Just pick up the phone and give us a pledge for what you can afford and what you think is fair for the programming on WOSU. That's all we ask, is for a fair shake from you to show your support for WOSU and 89.7 NPR News. So 1-866-897-9678, or go online to WOSU.org. It takes only a few minutes. 1-866-897-9678, or go online to WOSU.org. And thanks for your support. Thanks for showing your support for your public radio station. Gail, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you for all your programming.
Thank you, Gail.
You're welcome. I have a tortoise that is 7 years old. I've had him since he was 4 months. And once before, maybe twice, he's had a non-eating problem and wouldn't eat for a couple of weeks except to nibble and give up. Usually he's a voracious eater of vegetables. He's from South America, by the way, South American tortoise. So, and then what goes with it is I don't see any elimination for that period of time. And I'm just wondering what you think.
Well, one thing you might want to do is have your veterinarian take a look at your pet. Tortoises are obviously very different metabolically from other kinds of animals, being reptiles. And, you know, they're not going to eat on the same schedule as, like, mammals would, like dogs and cats and other types of pets often that we're used to. But not eating for a couple of weeks, you know, if that's a big difference from his usual routine, you know, mm-hmm. is something that I would get a little bit concerned about.
Oh,
You know, the fact that he's not eliminating at the same time is not that surprising, because if he's not taking much in, he's not going to feel stimulated to need to relieve himself as much either.
True.
But, you know, if he's showing no other problems, like if he's still active as usual, if he's still moving around the same amount, still drinking water and other things like that, then I may not be quite as concerned about it. But if it looks like you're seeing other changes in addition to not eating as much, mm-hmm. then I would have him in and I would take him in and have him examined.
Okay.
Maybe I better do that. He is moving around, but he's just not as vigorous as he usually is.
Yeah, and some of those changes can be kind of subtle. So, you know, if a lot of things like that are different than his normal routine, then I would say that's a sign, yes, let's go ahead and have someone take a look at him and make sure there isn't something underlying going on that's a little more serious than just, you know, not feeling hungry for a little while.
Yeah, I wish I could do that. I wish I could give up food for 2 weeks. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call, Gail.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. Thanks to Sally in Columbus, and thanks to Betty in Dublin, and also Suzanne in Worthington. We have 8 more calls and 3 minutes to go. 8 calls in 3 minutes. I know we can do it. If you look, stop looking to your left or right and look right in the mirror and say, now it's my time. Now it's my time to show my support for WOSU. If you're a first-time caller for to our pledge, welcome to the show and welcome to the game. It's called Public Media, and we need the public to support us to be on the air. 1-866-897-9678. We are running behind for the entire pledge drive, and we need to make it up whenever we can and wherever we can. So if you give us a call, 1-866-897-9678. We have 3 minutes left to make the goal. And 8 more calls. We're shooting for 8 more calls now in 3 minutes. You can also go online to WOSU.org and show your support that way. We appreciate anything you can afford to give us. You just have to decide what you think it's worth and what you can afford. At the $120 level, our gift to you is the Merck Muriel Manual for Bad Health. My guest this hour is Scott Line. He's the associate editor of the Merck Muriel Manual for Bad Health. And if you, Scott's a veterinarian, he's a pet a behaviorist. If you have a question for him, we've been taking questions all hour. That's the kind of show we do when we have shows like this. So if that's of value to you, call us and tell us at 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. And thank you so much for your support. Shelley on Facebook asks, should I brush my dog's teeth and how often?
Yes, it's a good idea. Pets get the same kinds of dental problems that people do, and dental disease is a very big problem in both dogs and cats. So brushing their teeth about once a day is ideal, is a really good thing to do to help prevent dental problems from building up too much. It's a lot cheaper to brush them and prevent the problems than to take them in and have their teeth scaled and be put under anesthesia and all that sort of thing. So it's a great way to keep your pet healthy and to save some money at the same time.
Just the way it does for humans, right? I mean, sometimes right. It's... how long would you go without brushing your own teeth, I guess, is what I try to tell myself. They have toothbrushes for dogs, too.
They do, yeah. There's little ones that fit on the tip of your finger, like a little rubber cap, and other long ones that you can use to reach into the back of the mouth if you don't want to put your hand in there. So, yeah, there's a lot of options, and it's a really good way to keep your pet healthy.
Scott Line, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure. It's really been fun to be part of your program.
Scott Line, he is the associate editor of the Merck Muriel Manual for Pet Health. He's also a veterinarian trained at OSU. He joined us today. He donated his time to talk about the Merck Muriel Manual for Pet Health. It's our gift to you at the $120 pledge level. But give what you can. Don't forget, we need you to show your support now. 1-866-897-9678. Or go online at WOSU.org and tell us you care about the kind of program we bring to you. You care about All Sides with Ann Fisher. You care about 89.7 NPR News. We're here for you every day. Be here for us now. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.